Good morning, everybody, and welcome to the November 29th episode of the Your Living Brand Live Show. My name is Ben Baker, and my company is Your Brand Marketing. Now, 9 to 5, Monday to Friday, what do? I consult, I teach, and I speak on brand message, market vision, and value. My goal is to get B2B companies, business-to-business companies in the mid-tier to have their customers understand their value and want to engage. Now, brands are built on the value that is perceived by their intended audience. And that's what's important. If your audience doesn't understand, if your customers don't understand why you're valuable, you're not. You're a commodity. Every story has a unique story to tell. Every brand has a unique story to tell. And my goal is to help tell that story. Make you understood by your customers. Make them understand why you are valuable to them. And let them go ahead and tell your story for you. Now, this show is all about telling people stories. It's all about telling people why you are unique as a brand. Why are you special? Why do people like you? Why do people want to be, you know, work with you? And every week I tell a different story from a different customer's point of view and a different client's point of view. And what I do is I bring on companies and let them tell their story. Now, this week, I have Sean Hall from Apogee PR. Sean is a different type of PR person. What he does crisis communication. He's the person, when things go wrong, can make things right. And it's not about bringing him on when you're already in a crisis situation. It's bringing him on early to be able to put you prepared. So if something does happen, you know what to do. Now, I'm going to let Sean tell his story. It's a great story to tell, and I will be back afterwards to say goodbye. Sean, thank you very much for making the time to be with me this morning. It is a pleasure having you on the show.
Thanks for having me on, Ben.
Oh, it's great. You know what? It's nice to actually interview somebody that lives in the same city as I do. I mean, you may be on the other side of the city that I am, but you know, it's nice to have somebody on the same time zone and somebody that's local. So I appreciate that.
There's a lot of expertise here in Vancouver.
There is a lot of expertise, a lot of amazing people doing a lot of amazing things. So as I was telling my guests, it says, you come from public relations. In a way that a lot of PR professionals don't. You know, a lot of public relations is seen as, you know, that touchy-feely stuff that gets, you know, gets people knowing, more about a company and what it does. But you know what? The PR that you do is completely different. And I want you to tell the story about, you know, what do you do? Why do you do it? Who do you do it for? And how did you get there? You know, because you've been doing this for a long time now.
I have. I've got a couple of communications careers behind me, as you know. Mm-hmm. Wrote my first freelance newspaper article when I was 16 for the Kootenai Weekly Express out in Nelson, where I grew up. Worked in community media for about 10 years. And from there, went into corporate communications. Was most recently the Director of Social and Media Relations for TELUS, responsible for corporate portfolios, issues, and crises. So, you know, I'm the guy that got, from a communications perspective anyway, be part of the team that was taking on a New York hedge fund that was, working in our transparency disclosure issues, security issues, you know, 13 years of financial quarters. It was good. And I've always been passionate about doing my own thing. Mm-hmm. And so I've struck out as a bit of an entrepreneur here, like you.
Right.
And I've launched Apogee Public Relations, and it's a one-person consulting firm. And what you raise there is what I don't do.
Right.
And I think defining what you don't do is perhaps even more important in some ways than defining what you do. I don't do the marketing kind of public relations. I'm not a marketer.
Right.
I don't do those types of things, but I can partner with people who do, mm-hmm. Where it's necessary, because a lot of the work that you mentioned there is super important. And if you're taking a comprehensive approach to reputational issues, you're going to need more than one person managing that, depending on the situation.
Right.
So on the back of my business card, it says helping organizations communicate through challenging times. And that's what I do. I played there when I was coming up with that challenging, interesting, challenging, interesting, because really they're similar. And so what I do is I work with organizations who are going through a change, who are grappling with an issue or crises to prepare for that situation through development of strategy and plans, but also exercise of those plans and those strategies. It's not uncommon to have an organization that has a communications plan or a crises plan that's up on a shelf. Crises happen and they freelance it because they've not exercised that plan. You see it happen a lot.
Well,
And
what's the expression? Is it all plans are good until you get punched in the face?
yeah. And I deal with the plans that what to do when you get punched in the face.
Exactly.
And so as part of all of that comes a lot of training and capacity building. Work with a lot of organizations, speak to a lot of organizations, and the couple of themes that are emerging now are around social media governance and social media management. So not the marcom, not the advertising and social media, but how do you manage your channels? How do you
Right.
deal with stakeholder concerns that are being raised in social media? Who has the keys to your social media channels? Those types of things, and how do you move away from simply broadcasting in social media towards the important tasks of listening and extracting the benefit that comes from listening to people, genuinely listening to people in
Right.
social media and engaging, as well as crises management. I've dealt with the odd crises in my day, and
Sure, too.
one or two. And I've come up with a bit of a gospel, if you will, around how to approach those. And it's a simple thing. It's let people know that something's happening.
Right.
Know what you know what you don't know. Respond and then report back in. Right? So you can call it notify, research, respond, report. And then you do those last three in a bit of a cycle. You're going to be managing that crises effectively because you're letting people know what's going on. You're inputting into the process. You're at the seat with your operational folks, with your legal folks, with whomever else is involved in that particular crisis. You understand who has approval rights. The last thing you want to do is get bogged down in unclear approvals so that you end up not communicating quickly or effectively, or for that matter, not knowing who to go to get information. You've
Right.
seen a lot of crises that go poorly for organizations, in part because whomever is speaking to the media or in social media really doesn't have a complete picture of what's been going on. The United Airlines situation, I think, is a wonderful example of that, where the CEO went out a couple of days, which is a long time in a crisis, after that crisis hit, and made statements that maybe weren't fully informed. And didn't have all the information, and he didn't have the benefit of having all that information at hand, and that played poorly. If in a crisis, if you don't know something, say so. We don't know when we're going to be able to resolve this situation. As soon as we do, you're the first one that we're going to connect with. I mean, people communicate. Let me reframe that. People absorb communication. People take communication through an emotional lens. Something has happened that's affecting me. I want to know, have you acknowledged that there's an issue? What are you going to do to fix it? What are you going to do to make sure it doesn't happen again? It's a simple human emotional response. We all have it. On the other end, we tend to communicate from a very technical perspective or a legalistic perspective. And it's a human tendency, right? You've got all these facts. Let's get those facts out. That'll help. It's a human tendency. We all have it. And
Absolutely.
a factor two is actually really, really important. But when you get bogged down in technical details, it can really work against you. At that point, you're talking at people rather than with them.
Well,
And
not
in a
only that, I'm sure
crisis,
the media just gravitates to these facts and starts ch fact checking, and it can start
sure.
working against you.
Sure it can. And it also doesn't give you it. You only have so much space when you're communicating with someone, so much time. The average TV story now is 70 seconds long. Tweets were 140 characters, now they're 280. That only gives you so much time to communicate. If you're not communicating an emotionally resonant message in there, a story that's genuine, that's real, you know, if you've messed something up, if you're not saying we're sorry, and instead you're relying on facts, that's a problem, right? I would give you a great example from my own career when I was back at TELUS. You know, we were having an issue with metal theft.
Right.
Where we were experiencing, you know, 30 or 40 thefts of copper cable every day. We were experiencing 30 or 40 thefts of copper cable every month.
Still a lot.
Yeah. And what people immediately do when you give them that fact is they do the math and they say, okay, well, that's more than once a day, right? We all do that. And then we talked about the impact that that had on people. You know, it cut off people's access to 911 service. It was serious. And, you know, we asked people to report when they saw someone up a pole in the middle of the night that maybe shouldn't be there. And ultimately, you know, through that, through some legislation that was passed and whatnot, the number of thefts came way down 90%. It was a success. And not a communication success, but a company success, because it was multiple silos, if you will, groups, teams within the organization working on that. And, you know, that one fact was powerful. 30 or 40 of these every month, that's a powerful fact. But it's the only one we really needed to use. There's lots of other stuff that we could have thrown in there. We could have broken it down annually. We could have broken it down by day. We could have talked about how much each theft costs us, costs ultimately get passed on, that kind of thing. None of that really has emotional resonance, right? So we picked that one important fact. We got out there. We talked about it through an emotional lens. The impact this has on customers, on you, is that access to 911 service, let alone the convenience of being able to make phone calls, right? So it was genuine. It was real. And that is meaningful to people. You know, someone has a panic button. Someone has a heart condition, something like that. That's a significant thing for them. And I think it galvanizes a bit of understanding why this is an important thing to tackle.
Absolutely.
And so in any kind of crisis, in any kind of challenge, you know, communicating to people in a way that's meaningful to them, that is through an emotional lens that matters to them, and understanding what's going to matter to them is important, right? So if you're dealing with an internal audience, that's a little bit different than if you're dealing with your customers. So you're working with the same information base, you're working with the same material. But really, you know, and you have to be consistent in what you're saying, in the sense that your facts line up and the information that you're putting out lines up because it's true. But you might be talking about it in a bit of a different way.
Right.
You know, with employees, it might be around, you know, we understand that this, the impact that this is having on you personally, this is what we're going to do about it. That impact is going to be a little bit different than it would be with a customer or with a stakeholder, with a shareholder, with a member of your board of directors, with frontline employees, with professional employees in the office, whomever it is, whatever your audiences are, but understanding what their emotional drivers are and what response they're going to have, and communicating from that perspective rather than communicating from a perspective of what's my response.
Right.
The ability to segment that out and set that aside is important in any kind of complex issue, but it's hard.
But a lot of this, whether it's internal audience or external audience, it comes down to having somebody out there that can help you develop a plan before you need a plan. You know,
the crises, that's important, right? Because if you bring someone in to develop a plan once a crisis has hit, you're already on your heels because you're not responding rapidly.
Right.
And so you've lost precious hours. So having a crisis plan in place of some sort, and I'm going to talk about a really brief crisis plan here, is important. And I say brief because you're not going to use a 50-page plan in a crisis.
No.
Right? You're going to get on a call with folks and you want to have a roadmap for how you're going to manage a crisis. You know, you've got an operational crisis or you've got a reputational crisis, which one fits into. Or you've got a digital crisis, say a malware attack or something like that. Who's on that call?
Right.
Right. Who's the team that you get called in? Don't make that up. No. Have a call list set.
And would you say that call list is actual job titles, or is it actual physical people with phone numbers and emails sitting right there in that document?
So yes, depending on your organization.
Okay.
These plans have to be tailored to your organization, right?
Right.
And they also have to be tailored to account for the loss of any one person. You know, a crisis happens while your CEO is on vacation. They're in the air. They're unavailable. Who's going to stand in and play that person's role? Or your director of crises communications, or whomever. Who's gonna sub in and fill that role? And so understanding who's going to be on that call and who's going to be on that call if someone critical is missing. And if you're having an operational crisis, sometimes it can be, you know, an earthquake's hit, and we can't get in touch with one of our offices. You know, there may be a big gap in the people that you're able to bring in. And so
Well, nine
understanding
eleven comes
who,
to mind on that one.
So understanding who's going to be on that call, understanding how you're going to structure the call, what goes first, right? In an operational crisis, having some of your operational folks start with a briefing of what the situation is generally a pretty good idea. But we often skip right by that because people are anxious to get to a solution, and that's, you know, I get that. And but just taking a few minutes just to understand what the facts are. And if someone says, you know, we believe that, pressure testing that, so that you understand what you believe and what you know, which are two different things. You know, we have a theory that this might be going on. We'll go and test that. And if you're going out and you're speaking to audiences, decide whether you're going to say, we think this might be happening and we're looking into it, or do you just say, we're just looking into what's happening right now? Acknowledge what you don't know. Don't make stuff up, because that's going to come back to haunt you. It's very, very tempting to do, isn't it? And you know, so understand the flow of that. Make sure that your communications folks are in there. Make sure that, say, your legal folks have a vote, not the absolute decision-making ability, but
No
a vote.
veto, but a vote.
Exactly. And all of that, and that you can work through what's going to happen. These calls should be fast and they should be structured. You know what's going to happen, right? So then you've researched what's going on. People have been assigned tasks out of that. That's a key thing. You know, you're going to go research that. You're going to go research this. We need to know this, that, the other. We're going to get back together in 1 hour, 2 hours, 4 hours, 8 hours, whatever it is. And then you're going to respond. Think about your channels. And the immediate thing that we always go to is media relations, because that's the visible tip of the iceberg in
Correct.
communications, right? We all think public relations, we think media. That's just the visible tip. The 90% of it that's below that matters as well. And so thinking about how do we communicate with employees is critically important. You know, how do we communicate with other audiences that might be out there? It's critically important. And then reporting those that response back. This is what we're hearing in social media. This is what people are telling us in social media. Listen as much as you talk. And bring that back into the next meeting and allow that information to adjust your approach. Right? And so if you're getting out there with information, make sure that you actually know it. And if you don't know it, decide, are we going to say we think that this might be going on or not? That's dangerous to do. But sometimes it's the right call, and every situation is different. But have those conversations. Know what you don't know. And acknowledge that people will forgive not knowing something. People will not forgive going out with wrong information. We're going to have everything set up and fully back up and running by the end of the day. At the end of the day, oops, it's actually going to be another 3 days. That looks a lot worse than saying right out of the bat, we don't have a full understanding right now of what's happening. And as soon as we do, we're going to relay that to you. You know?
Yeah, because people want to be informed. People want to know, especially in a crisis. Both your internal audience and your external audience want to know, what are you doing? And how is this going to affect me?
That's right.
My big
And they
question
also
is,
want
go ahead.
they also want people who've made an error or made a mistake to acknowledge that and to acknowledge how they're feeling about it, right? We understand that this is a really challenging situation for the people involved, and you know, we'd be feeling a lot of the same things, or we're sorry that this happened. Those types of things go a long way, because think about in your own life, you know, if someone if you're feeling something and it's deep and it's strong, and someone just says, I get why you're feeling that way, I get that, that gives you a place to start from.
Well,
If
it's
they're just
empathy.
indicating, they're just, yeah, empathy. It's a simple thing. If they're just communicating facts to you, fact, or defensive or anything like that, you know, your blood pressure starts going up.
Absolutely.
It's a very human thing, and understanding how people are going to respond to that. And again, different audiences have different perspectives and different skin in the game on that. You know, if they're working within your organization, external to the organization, they're going to view that differently.
Right.
Now, you know, your internal employees have a lot of pride in what they're doing. And if something has happened, if a colleague has done something, if you're in the media, that pride is hurt.
Right.
And that sense of self and everything else, and addressing that with an employee base is really important. Mm-hmm. Anyway, you were saying something. I'm sorry.
No, I was curious just to take it to the next level. Is when you're developing a crisis communication plan, if you've developed one, how often do you suggest that companies practice? Because you don't want to create a plan, put it on a shelf somewhere, and then 20 years later, you know, God forbid, you have to actually pull it out and then sit there and go, it's completely out of date. It's completely, you know, irrelevant at this point in time. How often do you expect people, or should people, evaluate their plan? And how often should they, you know, put it into practice in a simulated way just to see, you know, can we get people to respond? Can we get people on the phone? Can we get people to, you know, to respond the way we need them to respond?
Yeah. I mean, a couple of times a year is a good starting point.
Yeah.
It's going to vary based on the organization and the types of crises that you might face.
Sure.
It's going to be a little bit different for an organization that is consumer facing or working in a contentious area that has a large operational base versus one that's, say, B2B.
Right.
So it's going to be a little bit different. But I mean, you should be looking at that crises plan on a pretty regular basis and making sure that it remains contemporary, for one thing. Mm-hmm. I mean, the social media sphere is changing rapidly. The media relations sphere is changing rapidly. Yes. If newspapers are shutting down or a reporter is leaving a media, or for that matter, and we're seeing this as well, a new media is coming up that should be integrated into your plan.
Right.
Exercising the plan is important. So, you know, decide, who do we want to exercise that with? Is it a communications only function? Or are we going to, say, once a year or twice a year, bring everybody together for half a day or a day and run through a crisis simulation, right? We're going to come up with a crisis scenario. We're going to bring someone in who can run that scenario for us. We're going to cover off operational issues. We're going to throw some surprises in. We're going to set some traps, common ones. You know, you come in, you think that one thing has happened. It turns out that something else is actually going on. The first round of information that you get is rarely accurate, just the nature of these things, and running it there. So, I mean, definitely looking at exercising that, because it can feel great to have a crisis communications plan set. But if you're not familiar with it, if you don't use it, if you haven't run through it, the tendency in a crisis is to forget that it's there.
Right.
Because people, in some cases, panic, or you know, you go into fight or flight mode, and you just start going. If you don't know what's there, if you haven't really rehearsed it, right? It's like going out on stage without having learned your lines.
Exactly.
And you're making it up, and you're going to have
which is a bad thing in a crisis. It's making stuff up in a crisis is a horrible place to be.
So, a simple crisis plan is best.
Yeah.
Right. It's not a matter of having messaging for every conceivable scenario, because a crisis will hit and it's going to be one that you haven't conceived.
Right.
There's going to be elements in there that you just haven't thought about. And that's just the nature of it. And so having a simple plan that's focused on a process, who's going to be at the table? What is our process for bringing people together to look at this? And also, you know, what's that initial message that we're going to put out, say in social media, something has happened. Having a few things in there that you could put out, and it may just be a simple matter of, hey, we're aware something's going on.
Right.
We're looking into it. As soon as I have more, we're going to get back to you. People go, okay, they're going to give you a bit of time then. You've acknowledged that there's something going on, something that's affecting them. Not a lot of time.
That's right.
But a little bit of time. Enough time to pull your team together to understand your facts. Mm-hmm. Make sure you've got the right people engaged. You know, don't get to the end of a crisis or the end of the first day in a crisis and realize that a critical team that needed to be on that call isn't.
Right.
And then exercise that plan. It can be a simple read through, it can be a sharing, it can be that kind of thing. Crisis simulations are super effective.
Yes.
And one of the things they're super effective at is people get to know what their role is. People get to understand the negative impact of not having full information and going out with that can be those types of things. But you also understand maybe where your opportunities for improvement are, where your weaknesses are, and go and test those. And I find a lot of organizations right now that's in social media, where they may be prepared to go and manage an issue in media relations. They may have a great way to go and manage their other stakeholder groups like internal teams, like boards of directors, shareholders, those types of things, but are using social media primarily as a marketing and advertising medium. Marketing is the only team that has a key to that. And as important as that is, it's not the only game in town. And so having a system where public relations can come in and or customer service can come in and manage those channels to address the issue that you're facing is super important. How do you do that? Who has the keys? Who can make the call to stop putting out marketing messages in a serious situation and shift into a crisis management? And I mean, similar notes would apply to a more complex issue or change. So a crisis is by definition something unexpected that happens rapidly. Boom. An issue or a change is more of a slow burn. Change could be a merger or an acquisition, even a positive one causes anxiety with people. I have to move out of the office that I've been in for the last 15 years. I like this office. That can cause anxiety, even if it's a very, very positive change.
But
Same with issues.
it's not a crisis.
No,
No,
it's
it's not
not a
a crisis.
crisis.
And
So you have to
it's a matter.
communicate with people.
You got to communicate with people on a level that makes sense.
That's right. And in a different way than you will with a crisis.
Right.
But again, the principles are the same. You want to be genuine, you want to be real, you want to communicate first to how people are feeling about this. And just saying to someone, look, we understand this is a challenging time for you. That as exciting as this change is, or this issue, again, an issue is more of a slow burn thing that's coming in over time, say a development of a pipeline that's going to take years to do, an oil pipeline that's going to take years to do. It would be more of a complex issue to manage over the period of time. You may have little crises within that. Communicating with people that puts their emotions front and center and their emotional response front and center and considers that and just acknowledging it. We understand this is going to be a challenging time. There's going to be some wonderful things that happen. Here's what they're going to be. Here's how we're going to help you through the challenging aspects of this. That's what people want to know.
Perfect. So let's switch gears a little bit.
Sure.
Let's talk about you. Let's talk about, what are the things, the specific things that do that creates a niche for yourself? Like, how do you differentiate yourself in the market? Because you're not the only crisis communicator. You're not the only PR firm in town. You're certainly not the
No.
only PR firm in Canada. So what are the little things that you do? And don't take too much time on this, but just give me an idea of how do people understand why they should use you and how do you communicate that?
Okay, so you're talking here about my personal brand.
Your personal brand,
Right.
absolutely.
And that's really about how people perceive me, and my personal brand is going to be different with different groups, right? There's a couple of people out there to whom my entire brand is dad. From a professional perspective, how do I differentiate myself? All of my work really comes out of my personal network because it's built on trust. Very little of my work actually comes from my immediate network. It comes from two, three, four rungs out through referrals. And those referrals come from a guy that's hard, or come to a guy who's hardworking, who's known to be genuine, and who gets this stuff, who's able to look through a clutter of data points and competing imperatives to come to very rapidly a sense of this is the approach that we need to take, that strategy. Am I the only one out there that can do it? Absolutely not. It's a good field. But I think people who like working with me like the fact that I'm genuine, I'm real, and I'm a collaborator, right? I don't go in and tell an organization how they should be doing things. I go in and I work with an organization to understand the unique aspects of what's going on, collaborate with them to get them to a solution, and that's better for them. It's not a matter of applying a cookie cutter crises approach, but understanding the dynamics of their organization and making sure that we craft a crises approach or an issues approach or a communication strategy that works for their unique organization.
So, you know, that's this thing. Every customer is different. Every customer is unique. And it's being able to walk into a customer and understand first, well, listen first, then understand, then internalize, and then come up with a solution. Because there's too many people out there that want to walk into any situation with a solution in mind.
Yeah.
And that doesn't work for what you do.
No, I can come into a crisis and come up to speed really rapidly and help you manage that crisis. I can do that. I have done that. It's not necessarily the optimal approach. You know, if we've come in beforehand, we understand the dynamics of the organization, the decision-making processes the organization has. We can go in and make those longer-term decisions. You're going to get a better result.
Right.
Because you've planned it out a little bit. You've got, you know, the average crises plan is, you know, 2, 3, 4, 5 pages long. It's not a big, big document. If it's a real process-driven plan, like this is what we're going to do when, when something happens, as opposed to a lot of what we're going to say and build from there.
Perfect. So one last question.
Yeah.
And this is a question I ask everybody as I walk up, as they walk out the door.
Yeah.
So when you leave a client meeting, and you walk out the door and you get in your car and you drive away, what's the one thing you want people to think about you and what you do when you're not in the room?
That's a really good question. What's the one thing? Then I guess the challenge in that is making it just the one thing. But I would say that that he'd be a partner we could work with on these complex reputational issues we're facing.
That's important. You know, partnership, understanding, because you know what you do is complex. And what you need to do is to make the complex simple. So the people that are listening, the people that are affected, the people that are in crisis, understand that there's somebody out there that actually cares about them.
Absolutely. And you can't do it with skill. And you can't do it with spin. It has to be genuine. It has to be real and effective.
Perfect. Sean, thank you very much for taking the time to be with me today. Hang out in the green room. I'm just going to say goodbye to everybody, and I will be right back.
Thanks for having me on, Ben.
Hey, I appreciate it. All right, take care. So thank you guys very much for coming into the show today. Sean was a phenomenal guest. The one thing I took out of that is understanding what do you know versus what do you think you know. And there's a big difference between the two of those. And understanding that difference can be the difference between surviving a crisis and not surviving a crisis. So get in touch with me if you want to get in touch with Sean, and I'll be more than happy to put the two of you guys together. Once again, this is the YourLivingBrand.live show. Every Wednesday, we talk to another guest and find out what makes them unique and what makes them different and why they're not a commodity. Because no brand has to be a commodity. It doesn't matter what you sell or who your audience is. The trick is to find the people that find the value in what you do specifically and not your competition, because you're not exactly the same. Everybody has something that differentiates them. It's a matter of understanding that and being able to tell that succinctly, that people understand, internalize, and want to tell that story for you. Now, Monday to Friday, 9 to 5. Once again, my name is Ben Baker, and my company is Your Brand Marketing. We teach, we consult, and we speak on brand message, market, vision, and value. Come find us. We'd love to talk to you. Have a great day.